What's up, everybody? I'm back again with Read the Fine Print, the show. I have a very, 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 very special guest. I don't always see this guy, but we communicate, whether it's by phone, through Messenger, not every day, but enough. Known this man since 91? Jeez. Yeah, 91. I got the great Michael Biles and everyone. Mike, what's up, man? How you doing?
Not bad. I appreciate the very very kind words. Kind of overinflated me a little bit, but I'll take it.
Yeah. So take us. Who is Michael Bollinson for the people that don't know?
Michael Bollinson is just a very happily married man with two kids. I've spent my entire adult life kind of in one way or another serving people, helping people out, and that's kind of my gig. I'm a retired police officer. Trying to be a statesman, run my own podcast. I have my hands in a lot of things. So,
yeah. So take us back. So where are you from?
I am from Hightstown, East Windsor area, New Jersey. Born in Princeton Hospital many, many moons ago, and public school educated. So that's kind of where I met you. Was it 7th or 8th grade we met?
Eighth grade. Yeah, I moved out to East Windsor in 8th grade. Yep.
And then, I definitely have always thought of you as a friend more than an acquaintance. So then you disappeared off the face of the earth. And thanks to Facebook, I found you again.
Yeah, man. So I just want to let you know, I've never told you this off. I never told you this, period. Like, you were one of, so I moved from the hood, quote unquote. I'm not going to give my backstory because everybody that listens know. But you were like one of, so Hightstown, East Windsor, the first time I had like, I was really around white people that were my peers. And like, you were one of my first white friends, and you never ever made me feel any type of way about it. So I don't know.
I'm glad. I'm glad. Yeah. I, like I said, I kind of taken back by that. I appreciate that.
Yeah, you've never said anything crazy around me that made me think like, yo, is this guy racist or anything like that? Like, you never, like, and not saying that it happened a lot, but it right. Definitely has happened. And I'm like, and I don't even think necessarily people were trying to be racist. It's just
ignorance.
Ignorance, yeah.
Not being around. And I think that comes kind of from my upbringing. I grew up in an apartment complex where,
yeah,
you know, it was a very diverse place. I mean, it was white kids, black kids, Hispanic kids, Asian kids. It was just diverse. And, you know, we all got along. We got together behind some of the apartments. Where I lived, we had a big courtyard, so that's where all the games were played, whether it was football, baseball, tag, kickball, everything was done there. And it was a big community. We all grew up together. I hate to use this phrase, but it's the only way I can explain it. We didn't see color. We just saw people. Mm-hmm. We saw friends. Mm-hmm. That's the way it was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what's up, man. So how did you, so you say you're a retired police officer. I thought you was, I thought you were doing EMT work. You was doing that also.
I still am. I've been doing that since April of 92. I joined my rescue squad, and I've been doing it ever since. So that's mm-hmm. one of the capacities which I've been helping people out for over the last almost 30 years now. Okay. I was a police officer in West Windsor was with the department for about 16 years.
Okay.
I started as a dispatcher, got picked up as a police officer. And then in March, 6 years ago now, I developed this issue breathing. It's perpetually short of breath, and I just couldn't do the job anymore. So I had to retire.
Oh, wow. Wow. I didn't know that part of the story. But this is why the podcast is here and conversation exists, right?
Yeah, man.
Yeah, so West Windsor, that police department gets paid pretty well, huh?
We're not even the top paid in the county. Paid well, but not, you know, a lot of people think it's a very affluent community. I'm not saying we weren't paid well, but, you know, we weren't top in the county. There was a couple other agencies that were vastly better compensated than us.
I got you. How did you get into, I could see the EMT because you did that in high school. How did the police officer, because I went, was a lot of things, because I did my research on you, man. I know you, but I did some more research on you. And I was like, I would have never thought you were doing that. So how did you become a police officer? How did that happen?
So I wanted to be a cop since I was about five. And that kind of stemmed from a trip out to see family in Western Pennsylvania. And one of my great uncles, distant relative type people, was a Pennsylvania state trooper. And I don't recall exactly what, you know, the catch was that attracted me to that, but he in uniform, I think, you know, joking around, he put me in handcuffs and this, that, and the other thing. We kind of chatted, but again, like I said, I was five, so I don't have too much of a recollection, but it left an imprint on me that I wanted to be, I like had the idea of wanting to be a cop. And then my time of being an EMT, being around, you know, some of the cops that I was around, to me, it was a way to keep giving back to people, keep helping people. You know, I was the type of cop that I loved doing the community related relation projects that I did, community policing stuff, bike patrols. I understood that most people's interactions with law enforcement is in some capacity a negative. You know, there's like 10% where it's not, you know, motor vehicle accident, domestic violence incident. And I took it to heart that I needed to be the type of police officer that left a good impression with people, because of all the stuff that goes on, the nonsense, whether it's racially motivated, whether it's a systemic thing, whether it's just people being asses. You know, I always went and approached every single individual I met with at, you know, at the same level. We're humans and I have a job and that's it. I never looked at it as I was better than anybody else. And while I do think and know cops that have that kind of mentality, I know vastly more that kind of had the same perspective I did, which was our job is to enforce the laws, and that was it.
Yeah, police officers, much like lawyers, get a bad rap for good and bad reasons, right?
Right.
But I tell people all the time, is like, you know, when you're dealing with a police officer, so I do it from a lawyer standpoint, just follow all the directions, right? And it's like your goal is you both should have the same exact goal, and that's just getting home safely at night.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, and if you approach it like that, like, he don't know you, you don't know him. And, you know, like, if you have a disagreement, like, obviously it's hard to do in the moment, right? But, like, if you can, you know, control your emotions, if you're having a bad experience with a police officer. And for the police officer, if you're having a bad day, like, know, like, this person has nothing to do with your day. You know what I'm saying? Because at the end of the day, we're all humans. And it's like, you know, your main goal is to... From the person that's being stopped and feel like they're being harassed for whatever reason, race, sex, you know, gender, whatever. Make it home safely and then file a report and then call me. Like, you know, right. So you know, like that's your main goal, is to make it home safely.
I think a lot of times things are painted in a way that it skews the reality. And I'm a firm believer that there's kind of, you know, I used to say there's three sides of every story. There's your side, there's my side, and somewhere in the middle is the truth. And that's because everybody's got perspective. Everybody has their own perspective on what's going on. You know, past experiences kind of reflect on how things go. The old adage of, you know, don't judge somebody until you've walked a mile in their shoes is a big thing that sticks with me. Mm-hmm. And that's why, you know, I always took it as I treated everybody with the same respect. You know, everybody starts on a level playing field, and until you give me a reason, you know, by disrespecting me, then things, you know, we deal with things as they go. But I was very blessed to work in a really good agency. We did things the right way, and I loved the job. I loved the idea that I knew that I was there to help people, and people could rely on me. I've worked with some officers from other agencies and interacting through training and things like that, where you get that vibe and going, well, they're the reason why we get such a bad rap sometimes. Mm-hmm. And I've worked with some other officers and interacted with them where I'm like, if every cop was like them, we wouldn't have 90% of the problems that we have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the same. I think it's the same thing in every profession. Like, I see the same thing in, you know, lawyers. I see a lawyer and I just be like, that's why people hate us.
Like, you know, ambulance chasers and things like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, but the vast majority of the lawyers that I've been around and been had just interactions with, I think they mean well and they want to do a good job. But it's always like, you know, I look at it as the bell curve. It's like 20% are excellent, 20% are horrible. And then you got everybody else in the middle. 60%, everybody right. else is in some gradation on that curve. Like, you know, and it's just, I learned that through, like, when I used to teach at Rutgers, like, it was 20% of the students that just were great. 20% was, I mean, obviously that the math, I can't scientifically prove the math adds up, but it was like, it's really just a small percentage that are, like, great. Small percentage that's terrible. And then it's like everybody just in that BC range, you know what I'm saying?
Right. And, right. And that's with everything. Like you said, it's you know, are there bad cops? Absolutely. Are there bad doctors? Absolutely. There's bad lawyers. There's bad people in every profession.
Yeah.
But obviously with law enforcement and some of the other professions, the bad ones, they get that ultra huge spotlight on them. And it just kind of overshadows all the good that particular profession does.
Mm-hmm.
With the big thing going on right now is all the talk about qualified immunity and how it protects police officers.
Mm-hmm.
I think part of that, the reason why I kind of disagree with getting rid of that is there's a big misunderstanding about what exactly qualified immunity does.
Mm-hmm.
And that's with a lot of things, especially over the last handful of years, politically. Things are being politicized that really shouldn't be politicized. Pandemic is a perfect example of that. You know, wearing a mask is to me, it's common sense, but for some people, it's a socialist agenda thing. It's just ridiculous that that's kind of the mindset that we live in for some reason.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but we're gonna get to politics, man, because we're gonna get today. But yeah, man, I agree. Like, and you know, I think part of just from the lawyer perspective on law enforcement, I think where a lot of people have an issue is that they say, why don't good cops say something about the bad ones? Like the whole blue wall of silence thing going on. And I think I kind of understand both sides. You know, people going to be like, yo, you're a coon for saying that. But I kind of understand why it exists. I don't necessarily mean that I agree with it. But what's your take on it? The whole blue wall of silence and, because you hinted at it with the immunity, but I mean that's from a legal standpoint, but
right,
there's also a culture attached to it.
I think there's a lot of issues, and being in the profession, I see a lot of things from a different perspective now that I'm outside of the game, so to speak. So with law enforcement in general, I think a lot of the disdain that people have for it and the anger towards law enforcement, I kind of think it's slightly misdirected in the fact that cops are effectively the tool to enforce laws. So if people want to be angry about the laws and the cops, why aren't they questioning the politicians to allow these bad laws to be in place still? There's also the mentality, and this is kind of this goes back into, I guess, the systemic thing of law enforcement. You know, there are good supervisors and there's bad supervisors. And there's this prevailing notion, I think, with a lot of supervisors that if a officer screws up under their command, it reflects poorly on them. Regardless of what the situation was or what the error was, it makes them look bad. So they don't want to look bad, so they'll do what they can to mitigate it and kind of put it under the rug. I think if overwhelmingly supervisor said, look, this is a learning moment. You need to deal with the consequences of whatever the situation is, and not try and protect things, regardless of how minor it is, how small of an infraction it is. If accountability really was meant to be there and the integrity is there, we'd be in a vastly different conversation right now. But I think because it comes down to supervisors not wanting to look bad, they let the little things sweep away, and then a little bit bigger and a little bit bigger, and it just kind of snowballs and cascades the way it does with any, the way it could with anything.
Got you. Yeah. Interesting. So I'm laughing at myself because I used to always make fun of, this is like the random part of the podcast. I always used to say, like, why do these talk hosts always act like they're drinking from the mug on their TV shows? And I found myself drinking from the mug like my last four. Like, damn, I became exactly what I said I wasn't going to do if I had my own joint. But taking a little look at you, you got the good stuff though, man. Look like. So, lightening up a little bit, man. How did you get into the entertainment business? And exactly, because I saw you had a major playing card per se.
Which card are you referring to?
Being unionized.
Yeah, I have my SAG card. So my trip into that, into background acting, if you want to even call it acting, I'm literally the type of person that shows up on set, I blend into the background, and that's my job. that started, I think it was around 2013. Mm-hmm. One of the guys that I work with just got me into it. It's like, hey, if you're not doing anything, go to this website, sign up, and do background acting in your time off. It was something he kind of got drug into doing. He was, you know, a couple bucks off of it. And with the schedule that I worked as a police officer, really easy for me to get days off in the middle of the week. And, you know, they record TV shows and movies throughout the week. So it's like, sure, I'll go up on my day off and, you know, make $200 or whatever it was. So I've been fortunate enough to be on a number of TV shows and things like that. And I got waivers to get myself into the union, and that made me going from making $100 a day to a couple $100 a day. So it was nice.
Yeah, how many hours you got to put in to be SAG eligible?
So it's not really hours. Okay. They go by what they call waivers.
Okay.
And there's different ways and criteria to get into the union. If you get a speaking line, all you have to do is talk in front of a camera and you automatically get eligible. I got waivers for my special abilities because I was either cast as a police officer or as an EMT. Mm-hmm. So when you get those waivers, they're basically credits. Mm-hmm. For union, and as soon as you get through those, you're eligible to join the union. And as long as you pay your dues, you're, regardless if you work or not, you get to stay in the union.
Got you. So what's the biggest thing that you've been to that people will absolutely never see you in, but you're in it?
I would say Creed 2 was probably the biggest.
You was thing. In Creed 2?
I was in Creed 2, and I was actually also in 21 Bridges, which that one, if you watch closely, you'll see my bald head walking across the screen.
So where were you in Creed? Did you make the film or you got cut out?
I think you see the back of my head or the shiny spot on top of my head a few times. I was a boxing judge, so I was literally right on the cage around the ring.
Okay.
I spent about 2 weeks. We were spent recording that, filming that scene.
That scene?
Yeah, so that scene for that final fight.
Yeah.
It was about 2 weeks that I was on set.
Damn, that was a nice little check there, huh, man?
Oh, it was a very nice check.
Because you there all day.
Oh, yeah. There's some times where I've had to report at like 5, 6 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
And, you know, other days where I was lucky to report at like 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's fun. I've had a blast with it.
It's the last fight we got to look at.
I'm trying to figure out if I can easily articulate where you'd find me. If you're looking top down camera angle of the ring. Mm-hmm. I was sitting to the left of Drago.
Okay.
But there's a bunch of row of boxing officials sitting right to the left of Drago in his corner. Mm-hmm. And there's a bunch of bald guys that you'll see there. Mm-hmm. One of the bald guys that you see.
Got you.
I did get into the ring after the fight. They had everybody come up, but I guess didn't like the way that came out, so they cut that.
You got that. Okay.
I was in the corner right next to the Creed as he was hugging and kissing his girl after the fight.
Got you. And they did that for 2 weeks.
Might have been actually more like 10 days, but yeah.
10 days. So that's a lesson for people that don't know how film works.
Oh, there's a lot of stuff that people don't understand. Like it's funny, my brother-in-law and I were just talking about that. You know, people don't really understand all that goes into making films. Mm-hmm. Now that I've been doing some independent stuff with a friend of mine, I like the behind the camera stuff. I like the producing end of it. You know, seeing all the little nuanced things that really bring everything together, and being in, you know, using that as seen as a perfect example. We're in a warehouse, big empty warehouse. All that's in there are a couple rows of seats and the ring. But when you watch that and see him walk out and see the, you know, looking in the background, so to speak, during the fight, it looks like you're at MGM or you know, some big arena. Mm-hmm. It's truly amazing the what they are able to do with effects and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Hey, man, you're like you're like Forrest Gump, but not like the in a Forrest Gump way. Like you done did everything, man.
Yeah, I wear a lot of hats. I still wear a lot of hats. Some for a little more altruistic reasons than others, but mm-hmm. you know, to me, it's I do what I can to make sure my kids are provided for.
Got you. So I saw that I believe I donated. I hope I donated money to your campaign. I don't know if I did or I didn't. I try to support people when I can. So you switched to, I guess I gave it away. You switched to I guess you are always involved in politics, but you went to a higher level. How did you get started in politics?
Frustration.
Frustration. Okay.
That's the easiest way to put it. I've always kind of sat in the middle. You know, I think there's a lot of good ideas on the left and there's a lot of good ideas on the right. But I don't think that either party, I'm very big being against the two-party system that we have. There's no reason why we should have to choose the lesser two evils, which is a common analogy that we use when voting for presidents. Mm-hmm. I think a perfect example is the last two presidential elections. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a situation where neither candidate, mm-hmm. I think, were even remotely close to optimal, mm-hmm. or even serviceable for that matter.
Mm-hmm. Dang, he said serviceable. Damn. He went hard
for
with that
unique
one.
Right? Reasons. Yeah. I think we saw what I saw what I expected to see out of Trump.
We agreed on that, but we're gonna go deeper to
I wasn't surprised at all to see the way he conducted himself as president. I think Clinton was just as bad of a candidate, but mm-hmm. for other reasons. Mm-hmm. I really scratched my head and trying to figure out, you know, when you look at a global, well, you know, look globally at the leaders around the country and they're, you know, late 40s, early 50s, maybe touching 60s. When was the last time we actually had JFK? I think it was like the last time we've had a viable candidate who is not old.
Yeah.
And, you know, you look at the broader spectrum in the Senate and in the House and the people that are there are just, they're there for 20, 30, 40 years. Mm-hmm. And they clearly have shown that they are not in touch with what it is to be a normal civilian these days. Especially, you know, all the argument going on right now about the $15 minimum wage. Mm. The people that are against it are millionaires. They don't know what it is to work, you know, 60 hours a week and just scrape by. Mm-hmm. Don't know what it is to really have to stress over, am I going to be able to make my rent this month or food? So it's frustrating from me, from my standpoint, that there's not enough people that are willing to say, look, you're wrong and you're wrong. Why can't we come together and figure out what's the best way to do it? Mm-hmm. I think they constantly push out these ideas that are single issue things, but they don't even flesh out their solutions. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of people screaming about what the problems are, but very few people are pushing out solutions. Mm-hmm. So I decided to kind of throw my hat in the ring, so to speak. And in 2016, I ran for Congress for the 12th Congressional District in New Jersey as an independent. That didn't go so well. Mm-hmm. I think I ended up with 1,500 votes and the candidate that won had somewhere about 170,000. So, you know, it was close for like the first 2 seconds of the opening polls. And then I figured that because I'm not a Democrat or Republican, slow my role a little bit and maybe come into a little lower of a position. So I decided to kind of focus on state assembly, which is what I'll be running for again this year.
Okay. Yeah. Let me know so I can support you, man. I knew we were going to agree on a lot of things because I like to consider myself an independent. Both sides. If you really being honest, like you're going to be on the right of some issues.
Right.
Most people, you're either on the right of some issues, quote unquote, the right, whatever that means, and you're either on the left of some issues, whatever that means, right? So it was like, that's most people. So there was this actual research that came out that said, like, if people read policies with their party's name on it, they were more likely to support it, no matter whether it was on the right or the left or their political beliefs. And that went for both parties. And it was just like people really have, like, I say join the gang, but I really don't want to put, because gang has so much negative ties. So, but then also it's like, sometimes like these organized gangs are like, they have more roots and ethics than the political party.
Tribalism.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think it definitely comes down to tribalism. It's people wanting to be a part of something bigger than themselves. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of ignorance that goes with it, and blind ignorance. You know, and it's people that I've encountered when I was trying to get onto the ballot myself. You know, just asking people, hey, can you sign my petition so I can be on the ballot? Oh, I strictly vote blue. Mm-hmm. Or I strictly vote red. It's like, well, but what if you've got a horrendous candidate, as we had this last election, you know, who doesn't stand for anything that you do, you know, who's clearly self-serving? Why would you vote for them? But I'd rather vote for that than over the other party. You know, politically speaking, and it seems to be more overwhelming. The more extreme you are, the more following you get, which always baffles me. Mm. You know, I think people forgot about what it is to be civics, or what civics are, rather. I was just talking to somebody, I saw something on Facebook yesterday, and you know, the using the word, they equated using the word patriot as kind of being now equated to being a racist, you know, white supremacist, and the other, what was the other word that they used? Thug is being used to kind of replace the N-word.
Okay.
And I never really thought about it until I read that, and I'm like, it makes sense, and I can totally see the use of the way the word thug is thrown around nowadays. And I think there's a lot of merit to that statement. Mm. You know, for me, a thug is somebody, anybody who doesn't provide anything, you know, bullies and things like that. Mm. I would consider Trump a thug to a degree. But I kind of get frustrated with, you know, the idea of patriot being associated with racist, because you have, and it's clear, especially after, you know, the insurrection, people claiming to be patriots and doing things that completely contradicts
what they do.
It contradicts our constitution. There's a lot of stuff that's gone over the last 4 years. It infuriates me beyond words.
And to be completely honest, I don't think it's gonna get better. I mean, I'm hopeful that it will get better, but I don't think it's gonna get better. And because the point being, reason why, is that we've seen a lot of stuff over the last 4 years. And if we didn't, like, come together over that.
Right.
Like, we are, hopefully, we will never have a worse representation of leadership on that level ever again in our lifetime. And it's like, if we couldn't call out that as a bipartisan nature.
Right.
There's no hope.
And I think a lot of that falls back onto the tribalism thing. You know, it's a red versus blue thing. It's a left versus right thing. It's a me versus you or us versus them mentality. And that's the other problem I have with the two parties, is they have a vested interest to keep us angry.
Yeah.
You know, it's their job, or at least so it seems, to find ways to keep us angry at somebody else, not them, but find somebody else to blame for their station in life. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, man, it's unfortunate. And I, because I know people that claim they were Republicans, right? And I was like, what about what Trump represents? Republicanism, conservatism. You know what I'm saying? Like, you're conservative, and like, what about him represents that? And you know, I honestly don't really want to talk to nobody that was a Trump supporter, because I know there's no minds being changed at this point. Like, it is what it is, but it's just like the answers I used to get is just like, are you serious? Yeah. Like, he doesn't represent family values. He doesn't represent, like,
It's funny, I get yelled at a lot from a couple people that we'll call them Facebook friends, kids that I grew up with and knew through high school, things like that, because I'm perpetually bashing on the right, and I don't do enough to bash on the left if I call myself, independent and centered.
I get the same argument, but go ahead.
The problem is the right is just so full of hypocrisy, lies, and what's your side note? What is your course on language here?
Nah, you can do what you want, man. You can
There's
do what
so
you
much
want.
bullshit on the left, and it's just perpetual. It's like a freaking waterfall of nonsense and hypocrisy and lies. Like, I mean, blatant lies, and it's so present that that's all that seems to come out of the right. Is there that on the left? Yes, absolutely. There's stuff that they twist and contort and they lie about, but it's not to the extent that the right does. So it's not that I'm, biased to the right. It's they just give me so much more stuff to
They give you so much more
think
material.
about.
I they give you so much more material. So I tell
Exactly.
people, I tell people this, because I've been called a sheep or whatever, snowflake, whatever
Yeah.
people, whatever terms people have been saying, coon, been called that. You're Negropean. But yeah, man, it's like when so I've been going hard at the right, but I was like, yeah, I miss when I was going hard at Obama, right? But I had stopped going hard at Obama because based on my perception of what was going on, I was like, he's getting extra heat because he's black. So I was like, I don't want to. Obviously, I don't know him, and my voice is not that powerful, but I don't want to be that early the one of those voices that just because he's getting it like for the wrong color suit or
Yeah.
like
And again,
some.
that's a hypocrisy that we see. You're going to sit there and blast a guy because you wore a tan suit, but you're not going to blast somebody who legitimately made fun of a handicapped person or made some very clearly inflammatory statements. But, it's okay because he's on your side. That's ridiculousness.
And it was like with so when Trump came into office, when he got on the radar, I told people, the history is there, people that follow me, you could just type it in. I said Trump is gonna win. This is way early on, and people was like, no, you're crazy. Hillary got it in the bag. It's gonna be Hillary versus Bush, Jeb Bush, right? I think it was that was ran, and I was like, nah, it's not. And I thought he was gonna win the popular and the electoral college. I didn't know it was gonna. I was gonna win based off of my prediction was gonna come true based off some archaic rule, but he won. He won nonetheless. And I was just like, the people was like, why? I was like, because, like, people saw Obama. I saw the wave coming. Like it was just like a. The racism was coming out of people. I mean, it's always been there, but people were getting blatant with it. You know what I mean? It was like,
That's what we've seen over the last 4 years is he embodied some of the most horrible aspects
it's like
of
country,
humanity.
humanity.
And because he did it, it kind of emboldened some of these other shitheads that live in our country, unfortunately, that they could feel that, oh, if the president's doing it, then I can do
Can
it.
do it,
And that's, I have a lot of gripes, and I could probably sit here for hours and rant how bad Trump was. But when he first threw his hat in the ring, I'm like, there's no way in hell he can win. No way in hell.
Nobody thought he was gonna win
And
except for me, man.
then, when he ran into it, and then when we really went to election day, I'm like, I don't want him to win, but I can see how he's not going to win because I think the DNC completely dropped the ball when at their convention it came out that they completely railroaded Sanders. They pissed off a lot of people.
Lot of people,
And, when you had people that were on the fence about, because it wasn't really a vote for Trump, it was more a vote against Clinton.
Clinton,
And I think that's one of the other things that gets lost is people look at that election going, oh, well, how could you support him? Well, the question could be raised, how could you support her? She's not this picture perfect image that everybody was kind of painting her out to be. And you have people that vote for, I guess we'll call it selfish reasons. They were voting for her strictly because she's a woman. They were voting for strictly because they didn't want Trump. There's a lot of reasons why people vote for who they vote for. And I'm not going to knock people for it. I just wish people would educate themselves and look at the bigger picture. Like one of the things that I I always took to heart from my academy time was, you know, the totality of the circumstances. You know, look at everything and see how everything works together before you, you really make that decisive action and go from there. Mm. And that's what I don't see with our politicians, whether they're left or right sided. They, you know, as I said earlier, they look at an issue and they come up with a solution for it, but they don't look at the broad picture of how it's really going to impact things. And then when we get, you know, 2, 3, 4 years down the road and we start really getting far deep into the land of unintended consequences, and it's like, oh, well, why is this happening? Well, we made this law a few years ago, and this is kind of one of those things we didn't really flesh out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then, see, my issue with the GOP Republicans, when it came to Trump anyway, like, in my head, obviously, people going to disagree with it. I don't think you could be both. I don't think you could be a Republican traditionally and up until Trump and be a Trump supporter at the same time. Right. Like you can't be a patriot and, you know, being part of the insurrection at the same time.
Exactly.
Like, yeah, like, those things don't mix. And it's just like, I mean, I don't have the answer, and I don't think we will ever get an answer with, like, how people, like you said, just look past, like, these quote-unquote Republican values, right, conservative values, and rock with that guy like they did.
Well, I mean, a perfect example is, you know, a big core of the Republicans are the evangelical Christians. Mm-hmm. And they're family values. Family values is the thing that they harp on all the time. Mm-hmm. That's why they're against gay marriage. That's why they're against abortion. That's why they're against all these things, because of how it affects, you know, family values or their interpretation of family values. But when you look at him as a candidate, he'd been married multiple times, multiple well-known adulterer. Mm-hmm. You know, he was just horrible. And I think the perfect exclamation point on how much of a showman he was and a charlatan he is was the whole bullshit display when he went and cleared the Black Lives Matter rally just to get a picture of him holding the Bible upside down in front of the church.
Yeah.
If that doesn't scream to you how much of a arrogant, pompous, horrible aspect of a human he is, nothing is going to change.
Nothing's going to change you. Yeah. And that's why I said, I'm hopeful, but I'm not. I'm being realistic. I don't think we're just gonna have to figure out a way to coexist in a post-COVID world, post-Trump. Like, how? I mean, we're gonna live in a real time, right? Until before we started recording, I talked about, like, you know, people don't make it to see this day. So, I mean, we're gonna live in a real time to see how. You know, I do think it should get better, but I'm not hopeful. Yeah, like, I think it's going to get better in certain places and going to be worse in certain places. I don't think we can go back to the world that was pre-Trump being president. No, we can't go back to the world.
Reality.
Yeah, we can't go back to the world where it's pre-COVID. Like, it's going to be a hybrid of, you know, virtual, a lot of these tools that we're using. I think you're going to see a lot more masks more often. I mean, I just don't think the world is going to be different, right? Because we just figured out some things. Like, we figured out that we can have a person like Trump. Well, we lived through the Trump presidency, which was the wildest shit I've ever seen as a
president. It was infuriating on so many levels. And you're right. There's a lot of things that if we kind of get away from the tribalism, I hate the fact that, and this is my own little pet peeve, I hate the fact that we have to put a prefix before we refer to somebody as an American, Native American.
I got you.
African American, Asian American, Indian American. No, if you're an American, you're an American. Mm-hmm. And there are certain things that we do as a society that I think it maybe not reinforces, but it kind of perpetuates the divide of seeing people as just people. And when you put a label on somebody, it keeps it, whether it's conscious or not, it still keeps in the back of your head that there's something about them that makes them different.
Yeah.
And, well, they're not American. They're African American. They're Indian American. It's if we can kind of get rid of that, and I understand why it was put there, but if we can get rid of that and just say, if you're born in this country, you're an American, regardless of what you look like, you're an American. You kind of start chipping away at some of these things that subconsciously might cause that divide.
Yeah. I think it's going to be difficult because people get power in that. People that put the label on it and people that accept it also. So right. Being like, you know, like the LG, I'm not going to do all the letters because I'm going to mess it up. But like identifying that as a community, there is power within, you know, maybe like, let me get into it, like Native American, like there is power within that, like from both sides, right? So saying I'm proud to be a Native American, and also like if you want to look on the negative, oh, they're Native American, like, so right. It's so I don't think that part is going anywhere, but I do think that somehow, some way, maybe this podcast is just a little bit part of the drip in the ocean that gets it moving, this conversation we're having. It's just like
turns a ripple into a big wave.
Yeah. So like just like understanding that, you know, obviously. Oh, another part before I even get to my overall point. Also, we got to recognize that we're a huge country. You know what I'm saying? So it's like we will never separate, but we probably should start looking at stuff as regional things, if not even like state specific things, like
right.
like just issues, because like. The country is so big, I don't think people realize how big, like, Texas can be really its own country, like its own, you know what I mean? Like, it's so
bigger than some European countries.
Exactly. And Florida, you know what I'm saying? Like, Florida, Pennsylvania, you know, those big,
Alaska,
California, like, these are, like you said, these states are bigger than a lot of countries. And this is like, we are a nation of immigrants, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, whether purposely, like through, you know, my family came over from where, or involuntary immigrants, and like, you know, there's nothing like you. This melting pot doesn't exist, as far as I know, doesn't exist any place on the planet, like that many cultures at one damn time.
And that's the thing, is I think people there's so much to unpack there. We have cities that are bigger than some countries in population.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you really look at the left, right, red versus blue dynamic, it's centralized to certain spots. You know, you look at the country and it's overwhelmingly red, and they use that as an excuse that, you know, the Republicans should have more influence. But, you know, when you look at population size, it's vastly different.
Yeah.
And when it comes to certain issues, they're going to have a bigger impact, you know, like the hotspots for gay rights activity is typically New York, Florida, and California. It's not the swath throughout the country. And that's not to say that there's not people who are identifying whatever throughout the country, but, you know, there are things that are a little more prevalent. And I think the bigger issue I have is people look at things on how it affects them personally, not how it affects other people. Whether it has no concern of their life or at all. I mean, guys can't have abortions. So realistically, why do you guys get to weigh in on decisions about abortions?
Mm-hmm.
And that's a very broad statement, I understand. But you look at the legislatures and they're predominantly male. Mm-hmm. They're the ones that get to dictate if a woman can have an abortion.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of ignorance that goes into that. You know, they sit there and quote the Bible and this, that, and the other thing. And, you know, the big line that kind of I hear a lot is, you know, gay rights affect the sanctity of marriage. Well, first of all, a lot of people that scream that as an excuse are the ones that are being married 3-4 times.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have no problem speaking ill of the dead with certain people, and I'll throw Rush Limbaugh on the bus there any day of the week, but. Mm-hmm. He was a horrific human being, mm-hmm. who spoke so ill and ignorantly of many people.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a perfect person who would sit there and blast people for, you know, thinking abortion should be legal and, mm-hmm. you know, gay marriage should be legal, but because it ruins the sanctity of marriage. Well, he not only cheated on his wives and had multiple marriages, you know, he was everything that we referred to before, that it was counter to what the evangelical Christians were, mm-hmm. or at least what they purport to be. And I think if we can start getting people to look at things from a perspective of allow us to allow people to live their lives, you know, consenting adults to do as they please as long as it's not hurting anybody else. Mm-hmm. What does it matter what they do? You know, that's kind of my perspective on gay rights is if they're two consenting adults.
Yeah. What's your stance on the decriminalization of drugs?
So I like, there's a lot of aspects that I liked what Oregon did, where they decriminalized a lot of the drugs, hard drugs and everything. They're taking it more as a medical thing as opposed to a legal thing. Mm-hmm. You know, addiction is a mental health disease. And I have a friend who, she started a company doing interventions and helping people get clean and helping people navigate that very difficult circumstance. I think the war on drugs is clearly a failed war. I mean, you go back to 1937 when marijuana was initially made illegal. You know, there's enough evidence, in my opinion, to show that that was nothing more than greed and racism.
Yeah, the paper business and the
papers, plastics, and ancillary. He needed a bastard to go after. So he wanted a way to lock up the Hispanics and the blacks. Yeah. Commonly, it was the jazz people that were smoking weed and you know putting out some really good music.
Yeah.
But you had DuPont, who just kind of came up with the formula for plastics and was going to stand lose billions of dollars in plastics. And you had Hearst, who was going to lose billions of dollars in paper. You know, when you look at the versatility that hemp is, whether we talk about the oil or the fiber itself, you can make concrete, you can make oils, you can make petrols, you can make almost anything out of hemp. And when
I didn't know you can make concrete. That you just gave me.
I did a paper for college years ago on the negative effects marijuana prohibition has on the environment, society, and the economy, and it was highly educational on the things that you can do with that. You know, it makes a stronger, lighter concrete substitute. There's so much. I mean, you look back at the 16, 1700s of our country, and you could be fined for not growing hemp. And now all of a sudden, you know, 200 years later, we're arresting people for smoking a weed.
Yeah.
And it's just absurd. Yeah. I think to answer your question, I think if it's done the right way, and I'm not saying that I know what exactly the right way is, but I think we need to get away from treating drugs as a criminal thing. Obviously, we're talking about moving, you know, the traffickers and things like that. It's a different story. But for people that are just using it for personal use, they're not hurting anybody else. Why is it legal or illegal?
Illegal. Gotcha. That's a great question. I want you to give me a question, an answer that I'm going to disagree with. But let's talk about the political career, because I know, well, we'll see where we end on this. Because so you're throwing your hat into the what race again? So
it'll be the 14th legislative district in New Jersey.
See, you had to think about it. I was feeling bad that I didn't remember it, but you had to think about it too.
That is it, because there's a lot of things that I have problems with. So, you know, we have congressional districts, and then the legislative districts are kind of the same. There's overlaps, but there's you know, one of the big problems I have politically is the gerrymandering that goes on, and it's not just in our state. It's clearly, you know, you look up gerrymandering, and some of the worst case scenarios are Michigan, Detroit area.
Yeah, that's a big thing in the legal field, gerrymandering, and I might have to bring you back on for that's a whole nother conversation. Gerrymandering, then you dealing like that's when you start dealing with the systematic issues that, you know, people, for whatever reasons, whether it's the lack of education or just being uncomfortable, don't want to talk about, and just like, you know, like it's like white supremacy is not that. I tell people all the time, like white supremacy is not that you necessarily hate other people. that's the easy thing to point out, right? Yeah, that's the easy thing. Like, oh, this person hate is like, you know, like redlining. Like, what does that mean? You know what I'm saying? Like, what does that mean to a community when it comes to wealth and taxes and, you know, the American dream? Like, and it's like, it's clearly like, what does the credit score, when your credit score is affected by your zip code, right? Part of that formula. But that's a we can bring we I can bring you back, man. You gotta come back. We can talk about that. So what's your platform? What are you running on?
Primarily it's reforms. You know, there's a lot of, like I kinda talked about earlier, there's a lot of things on the books that just are ineffective, outdated, and don't make sense. You know, the way that our criminal justice system functions in the state. There's a lot of things we can improve on. We can improve on how we treat and take care of our elderly. We can improve, you know, how we deal with our inmates. You know, I would love to see us in a system where if people go to prison, that they're not just sitting in a box and doing time, that they're getting an education. They're learning some tangible skill that when they get out, they don't feel lost and disconnected from society anymore. Mm-hmm. I think Baltimore has a phenomenal program where they literally take people that are freshly released from prison and they give them a trade education. They can go out and be an electrician or a plumber. They can learn something where they can contribute to society and make a living without having to, you know, be harped on with the fact that, you know, they have a criminal background. Mm-hmm. I think that, and I think weed is a perfect example. A lot of people have been screwed over because when they were 19 or 20, they got arrested for having a dime bag. Mm. Holding that account, you know, against somebody in their 30s from getting a better employment, you kind of create this cyclic system of perpetually not being able to advance, like you said, with the American dream. Mm. When people kind of get stuck in way and feel that they can't make ends meet on legal matters, or through a legal way, they're gonna do what they can to survive. And I think the more we do to make surviving easier, at least on a base level, a lot of the stuff that we see go on, whether it's the racism and the stuff that politicians use to keep us divided, I think you'll see that go by the wayside.
Got you. What has been like, because the political world, even to me, is still kind of like, the reason why I commend you, I think when I saw you in person, I don't know if I said this or not, I was like, I don't think I would ever run for politics. So I feel like you kind of gotta. So the purpose of politics is to get the most that you want, that you believe in, right? But it seems like people always start off with good intentions, and then they become like this, like the Animal Farm situation. Yeah,
right.
Yeah. So do you agree with that notion now that you ran once?
I can't say that I agree or disagree because I haven't been in a position to really see how it go. I think a lot of it comes down to integrity, and that's one of the things that I kind of really stick to. It's a virtue that we in law enforcement really stick with. You know, you need to have integrity to be a good police officer. And I hear that a lot. You know, well, you should just pick a side, and you know, this way you at least get support from one side or the other. And that to me goes against common sense for me. I've been approached by both the Democrats and Republicans. So just join us. Well, you know, you can do what you want, but you know, we'll support you. But to me, that just exemplifies that they're not really what they say they are. They just want the right person to kind of back. Mm-hmm. And I think the more we get people who look at issues more objectively, as opposed to it being a left thing or a right thing or a Democrat or Republican thing, you know, I always try to get as much information about something before I make a decision, you know, make the educated decision. I think we get more people in policy-making positions that not only try and make the best and most educated decision on things, but also do that deep telescopic view down to the land of unintended consequences. Mm-hmm. When you make a law, you're not going to be able to mitigate every single pothole, but you can do enough with the right foresight to mitigate a lot of it. And you also have to be willing to be flexible. Like, I don't prescribe to the idea that I'm you know, married to any thought or idea. Mm. I'm willing to flex on it if you give me a reason to flex. You know, like with politics, flip-flopping is a big thing. I don't have a problem if a politician states that their position on X is this, and then changes it, as long as we're changing it for the right reasons. If I tell you right now, hey, this is my position on this, but then, you know, as soon as we disconnect and I go talk to somebody else, and with no provocation or no research or new information, I go with someone else and say, my position that I just told you is X is now Z, that's not the right way to flip-flop. I'm only changing my position because of who I'm talking to. But if I talk to you and we have a nice engaging conversation and you present some new information that makes me kind of rethink my position, and then I go talk to somebody else and say, well, this is my position. Like, well, you know, 5 minutes ago you said it was this. Well, that's because I was given new information and it's, you know, allowed me to formulate this different idea and this different perspective on things. I think there's a lot of politicians that are hesitant to change their position on things, even when new information is presented. That I think if we had people in those positions that are willing to listen to new information and not be married to a particular ideology, we can make some pretty significant strides in the right
direction. Gotcha. So I got one last question. At least I think I do. So what, because this is, I have a theory. So I'm going to tell you what I think, but I'm not going to tell you what I think before you answer the question. What do you think about like a parliament type style government where is representative by, you know, like, so for the Green Party, like the Green Party is never going to be voted in because they will never get on a national level,
right?
For, you know, they will never get enough votes to be in any type of real position of power on a federal level. So what do you think about the switch to, I mean, I know it won't happen because the Patriots, what do you think about the that idea? Is that a good, do you think that's a good or bad thing for us to think about? I mean, not think about, because we can think about whatever. Is that a good or bad thing for us to pursue?
I'm not sure we should dramatically change what the core of our Constitution is. You know, it's funny that we have a particular elected representative who, not to name names, just earned their GED months before they were elected to the House of Representatives.
Oh man, you gotta send me that information because I don't have that. We're not gonna drag people through the mud. You guys, yeah.
They made a comment about, you know, their job is not to change the Constitution.
I think I know what you're talking about, but
we're ignoring the fact that we've got 26 amendments.
Yeah, yeah, something like that.
And if it wasn't for those amendments, they wouldn't be allowed to be in the position they're in.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about. Never mind. You don't have to send it to me. I know you're talking about. I didn't know that part of their story though.
I found that out and I'm like, that can't be true. And then I found out that it was, and I'm like, that's kind of wild. I think we need to have more amendments to streamline our Constitution to how it represents us today. I think we need to get rid of the two-party system. I think if we get rid of the two-party system, you'll have more of that parliamentary style of government. I do believe that people should have the right to be representative, you know, based off their beliefs. And the duopoly definitely decimates that. I mean, there's no way with it. You have two private organizations who control our political motives, or the political arena. And if you don't play in those two parts, they'll gang up on you and beat you. You know, it's amazing how much control the two parties have over our country and over our politics. I mean, that's not what our founders intended. You know, growing up, I loved when we talked about the Constitution. I loved the Revolutionary era. And actually, I had a guy coming on a couple of weeks to. He's a revolutionary expert, so I'm gonna have fun picking his brain.
Yeah, I gotta tune into that one. So when we get off, so I'm gonna have you drop everything. But go ahead, continue with your story. Yeah,
I loved the idea and the notion of what they were trying to do, and the fact that it still stands. A lot of stuff they still stand. Granted, there's, you know, hindsight being what it is, there's a lot of hypocrisy in that. You know, the fact that they say we the people, all men created equal, and all that, and clearly that wasn't what they were intended initially. You know, if you go back to the drafting of that, and if they really meant all men are created equally, then women would not have been suppressed. Mm. Slavery would have been immediately ended. But the core of it, you know, the idea that the general ideas of what it was to have a nation and representation and things like that. I think if you get rid of the two parties and have multiple parties, you know, 10 parties or whatever, develop coalitions, things like that, we could definitely be in a better way. And I think that would do a lot to get rid of the tribalism. I mean, right now, mm-hmm. people only have two sides to pick. Mm-hmm. And for me, I opt out of both sides and kind of sit in the middle going, yeah, sometimes you got good ideas and sometimes you got good ideas. And yeah, when you look at, I know we spent a lot of time bashing Trump, and I have no problem bashing on Trump, but you know, when he pulled out of the Paris Accord, the reason that he cited was, you know, financial. You know, why was the U.S. paying so much more than other countries who pollute way more and that are more, you know, wealthy than the United States? I kind of understood that perspective, and I kind of agreed with that. Mm. You know, he pulled us out of the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which a lot of people got angry strictly because it was something that Trump did that Obama put us in. You know, what people I don't think realized when they did a deep dive into that is there was parts of that that allowed a private company to sue the United States for prospective losses. So, you know, it was right to kind of pull us out of that because that was just bad legislation. Mm-hmm. And again, the problem with having two parties is, you know, one party pushes an idea and without even understanding why they're pushing against it or if it's right to push against it, the other side immediately says, no, we can't do that. And I think when you start getting more level heads in there and more perspectives, mm-hmm. you start fleshing out and kind of bringing in more people into the fold that are willing to talk and engage about things. You know, growing up, religion and politics were two things you just don't talk about. Mm-hmm. I think that has a big factor as to why we're in the position we are in politically as a nation, because it was always frowned upon. Mm-hmm. You know, why can't we engage in ideas and share our thoughts on things? And if we didn't do that for the last 50, 60 years, I think we wouldn't be in the position we're in right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the reason I asked you that question is it's actually that I think like a parliamentary, I'm saying that right? Parliamentary political system would, I think would combat that a little bit, because I feel like a lot of just to combat what you're saying, a lot of the issues is put because people feel like they have to be here or you have to be there. If they like me and you, exactly. Then it's like, cause I don't really, like I said, by default, I support Democrats more, but it's really just by because the Republicans is such a shit show to me that I can't
get behind it. Yeah,
I can't get behind it. And it's just like, you know, so people be like, oh, well, you're a Democrat. I'm like, nah, I'm really not. I just can't. I really can't get, at least like the Democrats, like, you know, if they're going to F me, I feel like they're using some Vaseline, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Like the Republicans might use some Vaseline, but they're mixing it with a lot of sand in there.
Yeah. And it's just like, man, I just can't. And the hypocrisy is just on major issues is just way too much. We all are hypocrites, right? So,
right.
But like the hypocrisy on like major issues, and then what I saw from Trump and like, you know,
and McConnell.
The party get way behind that. And it's just like, man, like y'all been lying to me this whole time. Right. And, you know, and not just to bash, you know, the US, because the majority of people did not vote for the guy, right? That's a saving grace, right?
It was a little disheartening to see how close it was initially
this time this time. And it's just like so I gotta give us credit, we did put Obama in the office, right? Like, you know, so you know, we put, so it's like I think the last two presidencies like really really shows the complexity of American identity, in a lot of ways, if that makes sense. Like, we voted for the first black president, then we voted for the first, in my generation, the first blatantly criminal racist, like, you know, yeah. He's the very next president.
Years.
And it was like Obama represented, like, to me, like, you know, you tell people to do all the right things and you could be, you know, president. I'm obviously he's human, so he didn't do everything right. But you get good grades in school. You go to the right schools and
educate yourself.
You educate yourself and you work hard and you sacrifice. You can be great. And then you see, so we went from that. And skin doesn't matter. It's about the content of your character and all that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we went from that, and then we just went to a guy that I just felt like he did everything
wrong.
But even before he won, like, he did everything wrong and still became president. And I guess now that I'm having a conversation with you, I guess that is the beauty of America.
Yeah. Like I said, the problem with the 2016 election is they were too horrific candidates for their own respective reasons. They were just horrible candidates.
Yeah.
And
but the only reason I'm gonna push back a little bit, the only reason why I can't give the GOP that pass, I can kind of sort of understand why.
I'm not saying I agreed with the outcome. There is I can objectively see how he got that outcome.
Yeah.
But it was extremely disheartening to see that.
No, what I'm saying, the reason why I can't let the GOP off, because they had he beat 20 people.
Right.
Like they could have went with anybody, right?
Right.
And they went with that guy.
Yep.
And you know, outside of Hillary, and Bernie, who was really even close to the throne for the Democrat. And I can understand why, you know, the Democrat not giving them, I know it sounds like we giving them a pass, right? But I can understand why they went with Hillary more than I can understand why the GOP went with, as a party and as a voting bloc, why y'all went with Trump. Because like Hillary, at least she has a resume, right? Whether we agree with everything or not, at least she has a resume.
And you kind of knew what you were getting with her.
Yeah, and
you also knew what you were getting with Trump, and you knew that it was almost polar opposite and
exactly
99% negative.
Yeah.
But yeah, she had the political background. I understand the anti-establishment vote that Trump got. I get the anti-Hillary vote that Trump got. I get the pissed off, swing votes that he got, but he's just still such a flaw. And like you said, we're all human, we're all flawed, but to the degree of which he is a flawed human being, and for him to still get the nomination and still get elected was just
And the reason I'm pushing back a little bit, because we saw how close it was this time.
Yeah, that was disheartening to me. After having 4 years of that shit show, and people still felt that he was the right person to be in office.
Yeah,
it just boggled my brain.
Yeah.
And it's so disheartening. It's like, really, is that what our country really, really, really thinks?
Yeah.
I don't think Biden was a great candidate for a number of reasons.
Biden, he wasn't a great candidate.
But it really came down to, as you said, character. You have somebody who's just almost exemplifies almost every negative characteristic of the humanity versus somebody who you knew was going to be a puppet. You knew he's going to have his issues. But it came to that or decency. Yeah. At least you know you're going to get some sense of civility and decency from the Democratic candidate.
Yeah.
I mean, I have my flaws. I have my issues with Kamala too. I mean, she's got a pretty bad record of malicious litigation and really going after people when there was evidence to contradict the conviction. So she wasn't.
That's interesting. It's interesting to hear you say that as a former police officer. Let's do it again, man. Let's do it again. Now go ahead. Finish that thought. I ain't gonna stop.
She's just like I was saying, she's not the optimal candidate. A lot of people, like you said, they put their blinders on because it's kind of better than the alternative.
Mm-hmm.
You look past the negatives that she did as prosecutor for Los Angeles, I believe it was, because it was for the greater good, so to speak. Defeating Trump was for the greater good. And I agree with that. But again, why were we in that position?
Yeah. Yeah, and I think the Democrats, what they need to do,
they need to start playing hardball. One thing.
Stop stealing my thunder, man. They need to. I don't want to be sexist or anything, because you know people like, oh, he's being toxic, but they need to grow some balls, man.
Yeah,
they need to grow some balls, and they need to realize that the Republicans are not going to play nice.
The Republicans, I think, have clearly established that they believe and adhere to the right might makes right mentality. Mm-hmm. And they've been doing, even with the last handful of years for Obama, they are clearly the party of obstruction. Mm, they don't care about procedure. They don't care about past precedents. They want to do what they want to do, and they will find any way to figure it out. And hypocrisy, seething, raging hypocrisy, is not beyond them. I mean, yeah. McConnell is the perfect example of that.
Yeah.
Just look at last year, the last 2 years.
Yeah.
He had the last year of Obama's presidency, McConnell came out and said, we shouldn't be electing putting somebody on the Supreme Court in the last year of a presidency. And in 2 fucking weeks, you're going to cram somebody through. Mm-hmm. That's not hypocrisy.
It's
infuriating.
It's infuriating, man. So you're going to come back on, man. Are you coming back on?
When do you want me back on?
I got, we're going to talk behind the scenes, man, because it's hard to get you on. You've been avoiding me for years, man. But
I haven't been avoiding you. Don't throw me under the bus like that, man.
Nah, I'm just joking. So give people where they can donate, where they can follow you. I don't know if you take a donation. Yeah, I don't know the laws on that. But where they can follow your platform and where they can get the podcast, the name of the podcast, all that good stuff.
So my podcast stuff is called Adding Context. It's kind of a educational conversation about varying topics. So that can be found anywhere you find your podcast, Apple, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Podbean, anywhere you get your podcast, just look up Adding Context. As far as my political career, I'm currently getting my signatures to get on the ballot. Once I am on the ballot, my Facebook page is, I believe, Statesman Mike. Same thing with Twitter is @StatesmanMike. Yeah, I think that's it.
Well, you'll send it to me and I'll put it
I'll send it to you. You can put all that in the show notes. So, yeah. I got to get my signatures first. I have till June 8th, I think, whatever the primary day in New Jersey is, to get all that squared away. So,
okay.
Find you either in person to get it, or I can send you an email packet and you can
sign. Yeah, send me all the information and we'll talk behind the scenes on how I can help in any way. We'll share with the peoples and see if, you know, they could check you out, see if they like your platform and the thing that you're doing. You're like I said, man, you are one of the, I can't say few. I can't throw Hightstown East ones out of the book. But you, like I said, you always been a solid guy in my book, man. Like, I've never seen you, obviously I'm not around you 24 hours a day, but I've never seen you treat anybody wrong. I don't even know if I ever seen you make joke on people, man. Like, this is being said. I can't remember, like, Mike, like, even like being mean to anybody. I mean, I'm sure you have, but I can
be a sarcastic bastard when I want.
Yeah, I mean, you definitely got the sense of humor, so I don't want people to think that you're like
dry,
but not like I haven't seen you like. I mean, obviously you got jokes, but like I've never seen you like with a malicious joke. Like I've had malicious jokes, and I was like, you know what, I got to call that person because although I thought it was funny, that was kind of.
I appreciate the kind words.
Yeah, like, although I thought it was funny 30 years ago, it was kind of mean. Like, you know, that really wasn't
then. Yeah, but 30 years ago, we're kids too, so there's a little latitude going on there too. But,
yeah.
You know, it's a different story.
Yeah, so let me close it out. So thanks, everybody, for tuning in. And Mike, I'm going to share this with you. So for your platforms or whatever you want to do with it, like I said, as long as you don't make me look crazy, and I'm going to put the video up and the podcast is going to be up. So whether you're watching this or listening to this, please like, rate, review, share. And if you want to be a donor or supporter of Mike, the information is going to be in the show notes. If you want to be a donor and supporter of this show, it's going to be in the show notes. So until the next time, peace.